And welcome back to Auto Smarts. It is Randy and Boots. We're joined now on the program by Vicki Moore, founder of the Angels on Track Foundation. And Vicki, how are you today, madam?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Well, let us talk about the definition, Angels on the Track Foundation. For those of us that don't know, tell us what that is all about and how it came to be.
20 years ago, this past March, my two sons and four of their friends were in a car that was hit by a Conrail freight train at a non-gated railroad crossing. And my youngest son and two of his friends were killed. And as a result of that tragedy, my husband and I, through the court process, our case went all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court. The funds that we were awarded, we put every penny of it into the foundation to address dangerous crossings like the crossing where our son was killed.
Now, Vicki, this was in where? Northeastern Ohio, correct?
Yes, it was on Deerfield Avenue, which is on the border of Stark and Wayne counties.
All right, paint a picture of this intersection. Are there crossbucks there? Is it on a curve? Was there a lot of greenery there, foliage? What was going on?
It's completely changed now, but at the time of the accident, the crossing was at the bottom of a 16% grade. School buses were not allowed to go down the hill in the winter because they weren't sure if they could stop or not.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of this hill was this crossbuck-only crossing, and coming down the hill, it gave you the feeling of going down a tunnel because there were huge mounds of dirt on both sides and trees and vegetation that blocked your view. And when my son that was driving came down the hill, he stopped at the stop bar on the street, which is required by law, but he couldn't see because of the vegetation and the trees. So he kept inching his way forward, looking to the left and to the right. He could see to the left, but he couldn't to the right. So he was inching the car forward, leaning over the steering wheel. And by the time he could see clear, the car actually had to be on the tracks to see down the tracks. And 3 seconds later, the three kids in the back seat, my son Ryan, Allison, and Josh, were gone.
Okay, so a few questions. I mean, I hate to get so technical here, but what was that intersection like before? Did people usually just speed over it, or do you think maybe, I don't know, because I grew up in a rural area. I'm from Eastern Ohio, and we dealt with a lot of train tracks, and there was a lot of bad incidents. Did the train not blow his horn either? Did that come out in the case?
Well, that's something that the victims and the families that are left behind have to depend on the railroad to tell you.
Yeah.
At the time of an accident, you can't get information from the railroad. You have to hire an attorney through discovery and find out what happened. And then you have to depend on them to give you the information. There's a black box, just like an airplane black box in the engine of the train that records the horn being blown and the speed of the train and all the required safety procedures. And in fact, our black box was missing for several days. And, you know, we don't know what that was all about, but this is something that's very common. The New York Times wrote a story about this very fact where information that the railroads have can be manipulated, destroyed in cases that are brought up against them.
Right, because we used to listen. You know, my dig, we had a lot of blind. A lot of those tracks are gone nowadays. Actually, as the coal mines died and stuff. But I remember that the horns. My dad's big thing was the horns. Because then I always thought, what if the engineer doesn't blow the horn?
That happens.
Yeah, I mean, so.
And can I answer something that you brought up before? You said, was it a bad crossing or, you know, there's a lot of crossings. Because this was a crossbuck-only crossing, by law, it's to be considered a yield sign. A driver is not required to come to a complete stop unless they can see or hear a train. And in my son's case, he did everything he was supposed to by law, but he still could not see because of the vegetation that was blocking the view down the track.
Yeah, because in our day, we listened for a horn. If not, we gunned it. I mean, we that was the thing. I don't know if it's probably not the proper way to answer that or give advice, but Randy brought up a good point when we were talking before the show, the headlight thing.
Yeah, we used to turn off our headlights to see if we could see the lights of a train coming down the track. We had one, Vicki, that was very similar to what you're talking about, too. It was down a grade, and we thought it was very dangerous. A lot of school buses would not take it, but it was the closest and the easiest path to the school. It was a quarter to a half mile away.
Right.
But you always took your life in your own hands, and you never felt comfortable.
Never, yeah.
Would you like to see stop signs at least if the arms and the barriers are not there? I mean, a crossbuck does absolutely nothing.
Right. It's fine. It doesn't tell you a train is coming, and it doesn't protect you.
At least a flashing light. I mean, I think I understand the argument probably from the train companies and the railroad and the state. There's no money, blah, blah, blah. Because even to have how expensive would it have to have a flashing light, a big red light, if a train's coming. But I think I haven't seen a empty train track in I don't know how many years without the cross, the what do you call the
crossbucks?
Crossbuck.
Yeah, I see them everywhere. I don't even know of a single track anymore. You've done a fine job of making sure that gets done. I'm going to give you the credit for that, because it seems like in the last 10 years, the tracks I knew didn't have them, they all have them now. Is there still some out there?
Well, unfortunately, only 37% of the crossings in this country are gated.
Okay.
So the majority of them are not gated with crossbuck only signs or stop signs. And we don't promote stop signs either. It's just a sign.
Right.
In fact, there have been studies done by the Department of Transportation that a stop sign can actually make the crossing more dangerous.
Yeah, you get rear-ended into the track if you stopped. Yeah.
Exactly, rear-end collisions, and a crossing marked with a stop sign is actually 8 times more dangerous than a crossing that's equipped with protection of gates.
Yeah.
So, Vicki, what are some of the other numbers that you have? I know you've done a lot of research, and I know a lot of this is germane just to the state of Ohio.
Right.
But what other research do you have?
Well, like I said, in the United States, there's approximately 212 public and private crossings. Only about 37% of those are gated. And on average, over 200 people are killed or injured in this country every year. And the thing that really aggravates me or angers me is England, France, Germany, it's standard procedure to have gates at crossings or to have underpasses or overpasses. Why are we not doing this in this country? And each state each year gets hazard elimination money from our federal government to eliminate hazards and put protection devices at crossings.
Mm-hmm.
Our state of Ohio is using that money to install stop signs, which actually make the crossing more dangerous.
Right.
The government wouldn't be giving states money for gates if they weren't effective.
I think every track, the best thing that we've talked about so far is the fact that there should be a bridge or underpass. There's no reason any car should hit a train track, period. I agree with you.
Well, money is an issue. I will grant them that. Money is an issue. The states have to allocate, this money for that. But it's not a priority usually until after somebody's killed or injured. As an example, this was a known, what I call, serial killer crossing for years. 2 months before my son was killed, a young man was killed at this crossing, and then 2 months later, the week before our collision, a couple ran into the side of the train at night because they couldn't see the train, and then a week later, my son and two of his friends were killed. 8 months later, the state came in and put in gates.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Too little, too late for my family. But
right.
I will tell you that since the gates were installed, there haven't been any accidents or fatalities.
Yeah. I mean, so let me ask a quick question. What was the speed of the train? Did you ever get that information? Because that's the other thing. What if they come to a crossing that aren't protected? They should have laws that the train should only be going 30 mile an hour, because I imagine if it tore the car up as bad as you're saying, if three lives were lost, it must have been going 60, 70 mile an hour.
It was a freight track, so they were going the 60 miles an hour.
Oof.
And the street was a country road, 55 mile an hour. So you've got a 55 mile an hour road crossing a 60 mile an hour track with no protection there, no warning there to tell a driver whether or not a train is coming or not.
Talk about the accident rate. I know you probably have numbers in the state of Ohio. We're also heard in West Virginia and Kentucky and surrounding states as well, too. But is the problem on the increase or the decrease? Do you have any accident rate numbers?
I did some checking last night, and Ohio traditionally ranks in the top 10 each year for train car collisions and fatalities in the United States. and the statistics are always a year behind. And what typically happens is the country roads out in the middle of the country, they don't have a lot of vehicle traffic. And the state uses vehicle traffic count as a formula that they use to decide which crossings get gates and lights. And unfortunately, like the crossing where my son was killed, because there wasn't a lot of vehicle traffic, it wasn't a priority to put in gates and lights.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that a lot of the crossings in the cities and the areas with a lot of vehicle traffic, those are the ones that typically do get the gates and lights.
So the ages, how old are the kids, by the way, if you don't mind me asking?
How old were they at
the time?
All
five of them, yeah.
18 to 15.
Yeah, so they were teens. Do you agree then? I've always was 50-50 on, but after hearing your story, I kind of agree that only two teens should be in a car then. Do you agree with that?
Well, I take offense to the fact, because they were teenagers, that had something to do with it. Had I been driving the car that day, the same thing would have happened. My son did everything he was supposed to by law.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I'm not trying to be mean when I ask this. How do you know that? Because I know when I had some accidents, I would kind of stretch the truth a little bit. I'm not calling your son a liar, and I don't know how to ask that question. I'm being blunt about it. But how do you know he did that, the person riding shotgun?
Well, the engineer.
Okay.
The engineer during the trial said that he saw my son stop.
Okay.
But then he lost sight of my son in the trees and the vegetation.
Okay.
And
okay.
What that tells me is, if the engineer lost track of the car, how could my son see the train coming down the track?
Okay.
Talking with Vicki Moore, founder of the Angels on Track Foundation. One more thing I'd like to go over real fast, too, is obviously we're in favor of something that increases oil production here in this country, oil, gas, drilling, fracking, that type of thing. But it can be a double-edged sword. I know you're concerned about that. While it could be a boon for a lot of people that are down on their luck and give the economy a boost again, you're also concerned about the increased train traffic we could see with that as well, correct?
Right. I live in Carroll County, and that is the hub for all this oil and gas fracking and everything going on in the state of Ohio. And we've got a lot of the tracks being refurbished for the proposed train traffic. And the accident rate is up here in Ohio, and this could possibly be linked to the increased oil and gas fracking and drilling. The federal government has predicted that 10 times per year over the next 20 years, $4 billion in damage will occur with possible fatalities in populated areas across this country due to this increased train traffic.
Man, well.
So it's kind of like the whole scenario that we used to talk about in the past. You go ahead and you build the mall, and then you put in the four-lane roadway.
Right.
What we should be is doing proactive things, like making sure the tracks are safety and up to standard before we consider extreme or expensive or extensive use of those tracks, and we should not put the cart before the horse. Is that a fair assumption then?
Absolutely. If the state is spending money for track improvements and infrastructure for this oil and gas industry, why aren't they installing gates at all these crossings to make them the safest they can be?
Vicki, if people want more information about your foundation, the Angels on Track Foundation, is there a way that they can help out?
Yeah, we have a website, www.angelsontrack.org, and we also have a system on our website where anybody from Ohio can go to our website and fill out what's called a dangerous crossing report. And we've had a lot of success with this. The state of Ohio is using our reports to actually select crossings for gate installations. They've put in 54 gates and lights at 54 crossings in Ohio as a direct result of that. And the Federal Railroad Administration, the federal agency that regulates our nation's railroads, is also using our reports to send their inspectors out to investigate federal mandates regarding signal function and horns being blown and things like that. So we're having an impact nationally and here in the state of Ohio as well.
I've got to ask you a final question. It's been 20 years. Is it the same level of pain and agony for you and Dennis and Jason?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Vicki, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We'll pause and remind you, this is AutoSmarts.